SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. It is Derby Draw Day, and still just hours from the Friday card being put together and getting, I think, everybody that much more excited about the weekend. Pretty much everything coming into focus, and a much more stable 24 hours when it comes to the field and some of the things that were just flying in every direction late last week and over the weekend. There's been no, at least actually I haven't checked in the last, I don't know, half hour or so, I suppose, but it didn't appear that as the morning was wrapping up in terms of the works and the Derby Oaks session. Yeah, had quite a few horses that come out early morning, you know, especially in a barn like Brad Cox's, where, you know, there's no shortage of Oaks and Derby participation. And so some horses out early, including the Derby pair, and they both making increasingly positive appearances. And the Mandaloon equation is going to be the most difficult, I think, for me personally. You know, they say believe your eyes, right? If you believed your eyes, you'd say, well, you know, there's nothing much more this horse can do to look good coming into Derby. But it's just one of those long-running maxims that it's very difficult to take a horse in this race, at least as a key horse anyway, as, you know, your central win candidate, coming off the kind of effort he had in New Orleans. And so we'll we're going to start to feather in some firmer opinions. I never like pinning anybody down before the actual draw. And we will listen in probably for, I would think, a half hour, 40 minutes to the draw at 10:45. That's when they'll have the little pre-show. And Mike told Ed earlier this morning, might just listen in and take the feed from the other side of the building, the other clubhouse side, and the Aristides Lounge. And then, you know, they'll do the same two-part. You know, they'll put 10 horses in and then take a break and then come back. And then they'll interview. You know, we don't necessarily need the, you know, when it comes to the interviews and the post, the post-draw activities, you can pretty much predict everything. We love where we are. Wouldn't trade places with anybody. All of that. You get a lot of that. So, in fact, our friend Steve in the Pacific Northwest said, are you going to have, you know, any chance of getting Chad? No, I have. If I haven't explained this before, years ago, because we used to, for those that, you know, started listening in 2005 and the earliest days of the show, the weekend preview activities, instead of being, you know, well, it certainly always featured handicapping and punditry, but it also would feature a lot of trainers. And Bobby Frankel cured me of that. And I asked, I think we were at Saratoga, and I asked Bobby, said, do you want to come on later today? When we were still doing the 4 to 7. And he said, no. He said, no. Not beforehand. He said, I hate it. And then the more I thought about it, I, you know what? Bobby's right. What's the point? What is the point of, you know, what are they going to say? You know, it's just not, and they're under tremendous pressure. They've got, you know, in a lot of cases, they've got multiple horses, even if it's somebody with just one horse. I appreciate their time and focus as well. So I stopped that, and that's why, you know, you almost never hear from horsemen. Owners occasionally, and even some owners have said, gosh, I'd prefer if we wait until afterward. You know, they get nervous. But for the most part, just, you know, we'll get them afterward when they're gleeful, not beforehand when they're going to say a lot of predictable things and be nervous. So that's the back story when it comes to, you know, previewing in. What we will hear from, though, is some James Scully. Scully's going to come over. He went for a breakfast after the training show was on earlier, 7 to 8. And James will give us a post Oakstraw read, and we'll also get some opinions in on today's card, Champions Day, and the Isaac Murphy. I got to put up. I took a great picture of the wonderful murals, the Peb caricature murals that are on the second floor of the clubhouse. They're just wonderful, and they're historic. They go from literally the beginning of Derby all the way, you know, to now, and they're wonderful. So I'm going to put I got to put that up, Isaac Murphy. I put him right in the center, and his namesake stake later today. And I put up, it's already up at the website. I haven't put the multi-race wager decisions in because I want to wait for the scratches. But I've got the late pick five, which is a nice sequence. A couple of allowances, a maiden race starts it off. It's a nice sequence. It's a very tough 40 claimer at the tail end, on the back end, that's challenging. So the week starts with some good racing, and then tomorrow they come back, couple of the overnight stake sequence tomorrow. We'll see what some opinions from James. You've got the 2-year-olds tomorrow, the Kentucky Juvenile, and it drew 8, including some ones that we've actually, you know, followed and talked to John Enos and Wesley Ward in the last 2 weeks during Keeneland, and that nice Bohemian Frost for John Enos, 4-1, although the Wesley Ward Averly Jane is the 8-5 favorite in the juvenile, and they expand to 5 furlongs. There's also another 2-year-old earlier on the card. There's a 2-year-old maiden race as well, and there's Wesley and John Enos, Molly Kate, 3-1. Steve Asmussen, and Asmussen actually has got Vodka and Water in the stake, who's a price. So we'll get some opinions from James. Gary Pomisano Jr. is going to swing in, and we'll do our annual betting menu conversation with Gary, and get the lay of that land, and of course the $1 superfecta, and it's a funny conversation because a lot of people don't mind and like the higher, you know, the return to the higher denomination. Last year, when there was no mutual clerks in terms of, you know, people trying to bet 10-cent supers, last year they gave us the opportunity, but back to a dollar. And I think that, you know, the much like the worm has turned on the jackpot bet discussion, the nomination, the minimum, you know, denomination conversation has also, the pendulum seems to be, you know, swinging back, you know, to the higher denominations, whether it's the dollar pick six that, of course, just got started last week, the return to it, traditional style at Belmont, and more. So Gary will cover that. We'll walk through your wagering opportunities and the way Friday and Saturday lay out. And, of course, two-day wagers as well that are popular here when we get here, you know, the Oaks, Old Forester, Derby pick three, and more. James Scully wandering in, and we'll sit Scully down. The draw will follow. Mike Welch will swing in at 10, and we'll get the final timed workout summary from Mike. He'll give you the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and even Monday, yesterday, where Midnight Bourbon continues to just do really well. And, you know, certainly those that are have been Midnight Bourbon interested parties, you've got plenty to keep you motivated based on what's gone on here. So we'll get to that from Mike. And I do want to get in, you know, yesterday, nice to talk to Austin Reed and get, you know, it was just a quick hit just to kick off the season at Finger Lakes. And they had a nice day. They did over $1 million to start their season. And today, Fairmount, although I don't know how quickly people are going to adjust to the FanDuel race and sports book casino and day spa. I don't know what the name is going to take some getting used to at the new Fairmount Park. But the good news is it's going to be a new Fairmount Park, and there's a nice future for them in Southern Illinois, East St. Louis. So going to try to get Jim Watkins in and, you know, get a kickoff to the season at Fairmount. I got to keep calling it Fairmount. I'm sorry. I can't help myself. Nick Tamaro is going to join us as well after the draw, and we'll do the same thing with Nick that we do pretty much every year. We'll get an Insta read on who benefited, who sets up shop where, what speed or what horses are going to need to use some speed for positional opportunity. And we'll know more, a lot more in just over 2 hours. And so we'll talk to Nick Tamaro as well. And then at noon, actually, this is like the fourth or fifth year out of the last five or six. Going to join Ed and Donna Brothers and anybody else. Who else? Anybody else in there? Because I know Gary's not doing it this year. The post-draw, initial seminar that on TwinSpires. So you can look forward to that. I've enjoyed doing that. Ed was funny. Ed sent me a text the other day, and he said, you know, I completely forgot to ask. I really apologize, you know, that I didn't get out in front of this. I said, well, of course I'll do it. What do you mean? I'm going to be insulted that you know, you're asking me, you know, 72 hours ahead of time. It's fine. Things just slide off your agenda. Got to tell you about yesterday before I turn to James and bring James Scully in. Yesterday, had the opportunity to go out to the new farm that you heard Kim Weir discuss a couple of weeks ago. And I don't even know how to describe what has transpired for the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation with this new Chestnut Hall. And it's a fascinating story, frankly, that a farm out in Prospect, you know, which is literally, you know, 10 minutes off the Watterson, and, you know, kind of the beltway, you're maybe 20 minutes from downtown, out Brownsboro Road, which then turns into 42. And it's the road that takes you out to Oldham County from Jefferson County. You get out there and there's it's a suburban, spreads that do with beautiful homes. It's kind of a mix of new modern construction with some old historic homes that probably were there, from the turn of the century, I would imagine, to the pre-war. And then there's farms that have either been maintained to some degree. And I didn't really see any working farms, but the general maintenance of the grounds and the main house and some barns. Well, and that's what this is. This was a beautiful country home, a small estate that was at one time 1,000 acres and even more. And shockingly, it had sat unused and unattended for the most part for well over a decade, when Bill Carstensen had been looking for something out in the country, and a real estate agent that had been watching for him let him know there's this really interesting property, and he bought it. And even though the house was in somewhat disrepair. He realized the value. He had the intention right away of it becoming some sort of a sanctuary farm, essentially, for retired horses, and made the commitment, and the thing could not have been inexpensive. I'll tell you that. This is not as if it was some sort of a distressed property. So he instructed the people involved to maintain the house, even though it might have been prudent to raise it. Completely remodeled it, and it is glorious. I mean, it is absolutely spectacular. I'll put up pictures when I get a chance. And there's there's 11 horses on the property. They hired a lovely pending University of Louisville equine program graduate to take care of the horses. And she really fell into the job. And it's an amazing stroke of luck for everybody involved, certainly for the horses. And this group came over from another sanctuary farm, and that opened up another dozen slots at that farm. So there's some horses coming up from the Carolinas, apparently. Anyway, it's called Chestnut Hall, and it's going to provide TRF with huge fundraising opportunities, whether it's going to be weddings and functions. It's amazing. The whole property is run by neighbors, and they've basically introduced themselves to all the local neighbors. It's going to be a mammoth success, and Bill Carstensen is solely responsible for this. And the best part of it is why it's called Chestnut Hall. Cause it didn't come with the moniker Chestnut Hall. It's Chestnut James because in Dutch, Carstensen is a chestnut. How about that? How about that? See that now? That's a story that I'll tell for years, and it'll become an old chestnut. Chestnut Hall at Thursday at noon, as Kim had suggested, and Pete mentioned it too when he was on last week. Pete is going to be out there, and they're doing for $50. They're doing a handicapping session, and general derby discussion. So it's $50, and I'm sure if you go to In the Money Players Podcast, you'll you'll see the details. I'll find it, and I'll probably talk to Pete tomorrow, actually. So there's an opportunity for you to go out there, for everybody to go out there and see it. So it's very, very cool. James, pick up that mic, and we'll get started. There we go. James Scully, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I should also mention, going out there, there's a couple of other things that I ran into. I mean, I knew one that I'd been to the Zachary Taylor, you ever been to Zachary Taylor's grave?
I have not been.
It's very cool. Zachary Taylor, probably the least, almost the least known president. He was in office maybe a year or so. And then he got sick. He got sick off of some bad cherries and swallowed a cherry pit or something and ended up getting sick and died. But he was also a great military hero. But his grave is out that way on Brownsboro Road. I'd been out there once before, and it's a military cemetery. It's quite something. And I'll put pictures of that up, too. I always go to Cave Hill, too, when I'm in town, which is
just
the most incredible. I
just think the drive out Brownsboro Road, from Louisville is awesome. And you're right. I mean, there are like some new subdivisions going up, but none of them like that I've seen, like just driving out there, like right on the road. You know, you have to drive down, and there's a lot of new stuff happening, but a lot of the past, it seems like just the same as has been for decades and decades and decades when you drive out that way.
One thing that I saw and same thing, right on Brownsboro, and I'd seen signs for this before, and I never, and yesterday when I was driving back, I thought, you know what, I'm going to meander and maybe come up the river from that side. Mm-hmm. And I'd seen the signs for Locust Grove before. You've been to Locust Grove?
I have not been, no. I just know the race.
Well, the reason, much like I told, this is much less horrifying than the Jenny Wiley.
Okay. I don't know the Jenny Wiley story.
Oh, my God. not to sound too much like David on Schitt's Creek, but oh, my God. Look it up. You'll be horrified. It's...
That they honor a race for...
it's great that it's great that they honor her. What happened to her my God, it's insane. It's nuts.
I'll check it out.
You'll be horrified. Locust Grove is much nicer because it's the homestead of George Clark, of Lewis and Clark fame.
Right.
And this is their family. It's their family home. And when Clark, later on, he ended up living out his life with his sister and brother-in-law at Locust Grove. It is just spectacular. Spectacular. It couldn't tour the house yesterday because Mondays and Tuesdays are closed, but it's a National Historic Site. And I'd driven by it for years. I knew what it was, but I didn't ever go. And so yesterday I said, you know what? Then I end up on the river, the Louisville Boat Club. Who knew? It's unbelievable. What about the waterworks?
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible down there. Just, that Louisville Boat Club is wonderful. They have, boat clubs and docks down there, and just it's awesome and can't beat the views. And as far as those president's graves, my colleague Vance Hansen, I think he's that's part of his like mission. Like I'm sure he's been to Zachary Taylor. He's been to like over half of the presidential graves like throughout the U.S. and he's like made trips just to see them. So definitely he'd be a good person to talk to about that history.
Vance Hansen, as we've laid out many times with his nickname, the Quiet Assassin. Still waters run deep. He's the most interesting. He's the most interesting guy that you never hear from, because he's just so focused and reserved. And we got to get Vance's Derby push this week. I'm going to do that. I'm glad you mentioned. That's cool. I got a million things I can discuss. Forget it. I mean, we can't do it Derby because it'll be too much. All right. Let's shift gears and get a few thoughts. We'll talk a little bit about the Thursday or Tuesday and Wednesday cards in a minute. But first of all, some instant read off of yesterday's Oakstraw. Not that, positional is all that important, but, what's your early read, on Friday's feature.
Well, I thought that the draw worked out well for Travel Column. You know, I look at her, you know, Travel Column and search results. You know, both those fillies have good tactical foot. Might not be on the lead. It looks like perhaps Avis Grace will send from the gate. But if she didn't go, Travel Call more search results could be potentially setting the pace the way there's just no real clear-cut speed in there. And being in post 6 for Travel Call and post 12 for search results, I thought that post helped both of them. I think it's a top-heavy Oaks because, you know, I look at Malathat and Clairiere and beautiful and Crazy Beautiful. All three of those fillies are contenders in my eyes, especially Malathat and Clairiere. And none of the three are pace dependent. They've all won graded stakes behind like real slow paces. They might not get an ideal setup, but I think they're going to be able to sit close enough. And I just think, you know, like the Derby, you get past the central quality and it gets to be a little bit of a you know, it's, I wouldn't say it's top of heavy after essential quality, but the Oaks a little bit of different, where I think the top five in there are extremely formidable.
I won't argue. And I frankly, have somewhat, discounted the Arkansas,
Will Secret, Pauline's Pearl and Avis Grace.
And a little bit even Clairiere and Travel Column, just because search results and Malathat just seem to me to be, you know, that much, you know, that much more imposing. What has transpired is a couple of fillies that have looked really good in the morning, and I'm anxious to hear from Mike Welch later. And I heard bits and pieces of the show. You know, it's playing over the loudspeaker, so I don't know if you guys got to this morning. But Milfay was pulling today. I mean, she really wanted to go. And when she finished her gallop, the exercise rider, a woman who did not look slight, it looked like she had, you know, plenty of strength to her. It was all she could do to get Milfay to pull up midway on the backstretch. I mean, Milfay was absolutely on the muscle, and not in a bad way. I mean, I'll see what Mike says too, but she was bordering on running off. But I think it was very healthy. And of course she drew the 14. Right. But gets Joel Rosario. And the first thing you think of with Joel was, who was it, Practical Joke, that he managed to somehow managed to be fifth in the two path from the 20 hole.
Right.
So he was
right in the mix at the top of the stretch in 2017. He wound up being fifth, just got edged by Classic Empire for fourth.
Yeah. And leave it to Joel. And Milfay she's probably mid pack anyway, right? She wants to be, you know, probably in the middle or maybe at the tail end of the stalking group. So leave it to Joel to get probably in the 2-3 path by the time they get to the turn. And I didn't come here expecting to have an interest in using her, but I'll be hard pressed, frankly, not to. And the other one, in fact, Papo Morales and I were exchanging notes. Will Secret, just knowing what you're dealing with Dallas, Will Secret looks very, very ready coming into this, and she's going to be, you know, 25-1. And then there's Pass the Champagne, who we, you know, just got here, and so we haven't seen yet, you know, to get a feel. So we got a couple of mornings, you know, tomorrow and Thursday particularly to see Pass the Champagne. But
I'll say about Milfield, I know she's, her pedigree being by Curl and Audible Warfront mare, you think not for a long distance be no problem, but I have been a little bit concerned by the fact that she's run so well in those one turn mile races, and in both two turn efforts she struck the lead in upper stretch and then, you know, basically got out finished to the wire. I think she's going to have to just move forward off of those efforts to really thrive going nine furlongs against that group. I look at her, and plus that outside post just pretty much sealed it. I could see using her under underneath in the exotics. I know both, like, watching the work show for last week and a half, Brandon Staubel and Rosie Napravnik love the way that filly's training. But, you know, it's a little bit like with these Oaks horses. I'm not sure how tough those races were in Florida. And even with Search Results, I look at that Gazelle, you know, where she's on the wrong lead all the way down the stretch. And I just didn't think that competition was much in that race. So I granted, you know, both, you know, those fillies look like they're really classy and good, but they still have to prove it in a sense. Travel Column and Clairier, I understand the concerns with them. And are they really that fast? But they have, to me, a huge class edge over a lot of these horses. You know, Malathat doesn't have to worry about that, in my mind, winning the Ashland and Demoiselle. But some of these others, like Crazy Beautiful, Search Results, and Mill Fuel, I just am a little bit worried whether or not they'll be good enough.
The Oaks ends the Friday card, and it goes off at 5:51. And let's touch on, because I'm sure a lot of you have yet to really print PPs. They became available at about 5:36 o'clock yesterday. And the sequence in terms of the stakes sequence, and there is the Derby City pick six, the 20 cent pick six being utilized this meet. And Gary Palmisano is going to join us in about 20 minutes, and we'll get Gary to go through the menu and that portion of the topics. But the Ali Sheba, you know, certainly a spot where Maxfield is going to end up, you know, being probably the shortest price of the day, maybe the shortest price
of
the weekend.
A lot of the usual suspects in that field as well. You know, yeah. One of those horses, he's already been beaten.
Mile and a 16th, of course, and you've got Chess Chief in here for Dallas, and Baffert's got Roadster, who
he's without stall now. Is he? Or he was without stall at the fairgrounds.
Was
Roadster,
he?
Yeah.
Is he back with Baffert?
I don't have those PPs.
Let me see.
He ran in the.
That's right.
He ran Al Stahl Jr.
Interesting. Let's see. Let's see who he's. Stidham, actually.
Oh, Stidham. Okay. I'm
Stidham
sorry.
With Speedway, but with the New Orleans Classic. But he's back with Baffert. Back listed under. And he did go. It's funny. He did go back to Santa Anita after.
You know, that race didn't have any pace, it looked like, on paper, and he set the pace and sort of, you know, I just didn't know what to think too much of that effort, but eligible, obviously he was, you know, probably needed the race, so could go either way where
Jesus.
He could improve upon it.
Roadster's a five-year-old. It feels like he's been around for 8 years.
Yeah, well, you know, he was the horse that Baffert touted as a two-year-old when he broke his maiden that summer, because they were all over him. Hey, who's your next Justify? Who's your next
Justify? Oh, that's right.
And
it was supposed to be Roadster.
That summer after he broke his maiden, and everybody had him on the tip of his tongue for a couple months.
That's funny. In addition, you've got, when you said usual suspects, it made me laugh. Attachment Rate, who
Now he is coming in for Gulfstream. I like him a little bit improving this year, but I'm a little worried he prefers a one turn mile distance.
Well, and that point has been made.
I liked his win two starts back last time.
He came back, when the seasonal,
really an
February.
Impressive move, and then just to carry it forward in the stretch like he did. I thought the horse that ran second ran pretty good that day, but I wasn't too pleased with that Commonwealth.
You got Sonneman for Steve Asmussen, I feel badly. You know, we all feel badly for Don Adam and Donna Adam, greatest honor. And I don't think participation in the Ali Sheba is is a consolation prize. You know, the Edgewood, we're just kind of touching on the undercard for Friday. You know, Aunt Pearl is going to be one of the shortest prices of the weekend. And a very savvy West Coast regular that is on my website on Derby Trail made a point that since the Edgewood came around, no seasonal debut horse has won, and that includes Newspaper of Record.
Right. Who looked just sort of looked like
very much like Aunt Pearl.
Yeah,
exactly.
Ran the competition
exactly.
Into the ground as a 2-year-old, including the Breeders' Cup. Looks like, you know, thought a Newspaper Record was just going to crush him wire to wire, which he came back, and, you know, there was Concrete Rose. And it's, I look at this field, and it's the same way. Aunt Pearl, you know, you could easily say should win, but, you know, I got in the back of my mind, who could be that filly if she's not, you know, primed off the layoff. And, you know, nobody really sticks out from that perspective to me, Steve, but I'm going to do some more handicapping on the Edgewood.
Well, smallish field, and you do have the second North America for the Brian Lynch Ammerman filly, that gift list, who may be okay coming out of that placement.
There's a filly in today that ran against Postnup, so I was going to be interested in seeing how she
there we go.
In like an allowance race today.
The Grade 1 La Troyenne, and this, of course, along with the Oaks, are the two races toward the 2-day pick six.
Right.
And the
all
two,
six Grade 1s.
All six Grade 1s on the same ticket. And in fact, there's a lot going on in the La Troyenne, because in addition to the, and that's a $2, mm-hmm. and Gary will explain that, that ties the La Troyenne, the Oaks, the Distaff, the Derby City Distaff, the former Humana Distaff, the Churchill Downs, the Old Forster, and the Derby. And, in fact, Gary Palmisano breezes in. So the two-day, $2 pick six, and the La Troyenne, you know, Dunbar Road and you know, She Dares the Devil are clearly, you know, a lot of people rely on that pair.
Right. For sure. And then, you know, Paris Lights as well is, you know, a little intriguing. You know, she ran well last summer, coming back, you know, has raced, you know, Vermont, eligible to, you know, show up with a good effort. But, you know, she was under consideration last year for the Kentucky Oaks, but didn't come, wound up going to Alabama instead. And, you know, so I'm excited to see her back this year at age 4. And, yeah, pretty good matchup. It's going to be exciting. Dunbar Road. Really, you know, she's been out there training with search results mm-hmm. in the morning. So
you've got something in this race that is quite remarkable. Envoûtante, 3-for-3 or 2-for-2 at Churchill. She Dares the Devil, 3-for-3 at Churchill. Dunbar Road, who won the Shawnee, 1-for-1 at Churchill. Paris Lights, 2-for-2 at Churchill. Finite for Steve Asmussen, 3-for-3 at Churchill. I don't know if I've ever seen that in a stakes race to that degree.
Yeah, I mean, and all those horses, I mean, you know, they're coming in from other venues as well and have run here in the past. Definitely, you know, I mean, the race is clearly going to go through She Dares the Devil off of her last race at Oaklawn. I thought that was a huge performance. I really thought she stamped herself as a stakes-bound filly when she won that allowance last summer at Churchill. She was brilliant that day. And then her Oaks race was terrific. So she's clearly the horse to beat. But, you know, once again, you know, you've got some classy runners coming in and not impossible that like somebody like Dunbar Road could step up and beat her.
Well, the question it becomes, who's going to put the pressure on from a pace standpoint? And there are a couple of candidates. Bayesian Girl for Rowan Crichton has got speed, and Paris Lights likes to draft off of a leader. So there are, I mean, She Dares the Devil clearly, especially drawing the two-hole, she clearly is going to go. And actually, Envoûtante, yeah, she's a route-going type. Her last two in the Fall City to end the year as a 3-year-old and in the Azari, she was near the lead. She showed more speed than she had earlier in her 3-year-old year. And being drawn down inside, she's probably going to want to at least be somewhat forward with Brian Hernandez Jr. to, you know, have decent position early. So the She Dares the Devil's not going to have everything her own way. That's the bottom line. The 8 Bells, of course, for the 3-year-old fillies, and this ended up being a beneficiary of some as always is the case with these one-turn, three-year-old exclusive events, you know, horses that I don't want to say washed out as route types, as Oaks or in the case of Boys, Derby types. But you do have some very nice ones that are either turning back, like Super Sensational, who Cassie and Mrs. Weber tried to, you know, make into a two-turn horse, but her two best races clearly, not that she ran badly in the Fairgrounds Oaks, because she ran well, but, turns back to 7/8. You've got somebody like Kelly Breen with that nice Slumber Party. Mott turns back with Obligatory. Day Out of the Office, who there were rumors that she was, really not right, but her work tab, starting in March in Tampa, got very aggressive and very sharp. So,
Right spot for her. She, to me, like in that Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, I was really surprised to see her, give way like she did that day. Looked like she had it. The Slumber Party, I thought that bad break last time hurt her at Keeneland, but I really like the resolve that she showed to still finish up well. I think she'll improve upon that stakes effort. She's very definitely intriguing to me.
Well, and then on the outside, we should note, especially going 7/8, and I'm anxious to see what Marty decides, but Luis Saez gets a first try on Caramel Swirl, who was so impressive breaking her maiden at Keeneland a couple of weeks ago. And she's in the outside box where the air is fresh and clear. So we'll watch for her. A very good addition of the Twin Spires Turf Sprint, which is not surprising. And Faya, of course, came up in conversation yesterday. The Albertrani, Robert Masiello, Frisian Fire gelding makes his seasonal debut, and he comes in with a 5-race win streak, but this is a good group.
Yeah, both the 8 Bells and the Twin Spires Turf Sprint, I thought, came up as really good betting races. No overwhelming favorite in either spot.
Diamond Oops makes a seasonal appearance, seasonal debut for Patrick Biancone, and of course was back and forth off some turf and came here last year and won this race.
A big rush up the rail to win that day. I thought that was a really, really terrific performance.
Good to see Fast Boat back, too. Fast Boat, the City Zip veteran for Brad Grady and Joe Sharp, Caratari on the outside, and then you get to the Kentucky Oaks. So there's a glance at the stakes card for Friday, and James, we could do this. We could incorporate our man Gary. We got two choices. Yeah, there you go. James, slap the headset on. Wrong way. There you go. Luckily, most of us are somewhat hair deprived lately. We're not going the other way, so the headset doesn't affect us too badly. Gary Palmisano Jr.
Good morning. How are we doing? Welcome to Louisville.
Thank you. I nobody's saying Happy Champions Day yet, but soon enough.
I hear you. Yeah, looking forward. The sun's shining out there, fast and firm. So it's going to be a nice day of racing to kick off Derby Week. We're excited.
The Isaac Murphy added in become a regular part of the Derby Week festivities. You mentioned the sun shining. Weather-wise, we should mention, rain's going to move in tomorrow and through Thursday. So tomorrow afternoon, later in the day, and then overnight, and Thursday looks somewhat. Derby looks like a little bit of a washout, but then it's going to clear out by midnight Thursday. So into Oaks Day and Derby, we're free and clear, but we are going to have a little 36-hour event.
Yeah, that's certainly how it looks. I think it's a little undetermined on Thursday as to how much rain we'll get exactly, but it certainly all the forecasts show the high probability of high percentage of rain. But to your point, I think Friday and Saturday, we've been knocking on wood all week when we first saw that 14-day forecast come out, hoping that holds, and we should have a very nice Friday and Saturday. And the Churchill Track main track dries out extremely quickly here. The guys do a great job. So I think Friday, barring any monsoon on Thursday, I think Friday we should be in great shape, and then Saturday as well.
And the grass course, did they do the drainage project, or is that coming? That's coming
post spring meet.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Because there's always been a problem. It's funny. This was true of the main track too. The clubhouse turn forever was a lowland spot that was been problematic for as long as I've been coming here. And the apocryphal story about the concrete that was poured down a drain. When concrete was being laid at some point over in that corner, the concrete company spritzed some down the drain, and that it blocked a drain, and so it was always water was always milling in that corner, and that's why that's strictly one of those apocryphal stories that
you have a little notebook of all these things.
This is all stuff that when you come here for 2 weeks every year for 20 years, and that included barbecue, coming for the barbecue before the show. You're hanging around all day long, and you're in the infield, and so people tell you stories, and
don't know of
part of the neighborhood.
Yeah. The racetrack is there's so many characters and stories like that. It's incredible. But yeah, we're excited. We're looking forward to a fun week. And I think knock on wood again, we should be in great shape for Friday and Saturday.
Talk a little bit about, obviously, is it even worth talking about last September? Because at this point, it's something that, is going to be a footnote for everybody. Not that it wasn't a terrific race that Authentic goes down as a Derby winner and so forth. I think I called him audible yesterday. I think I later in the afternoon I said it's one of those things. I said I think I called Authentic audible at some point yesterday. Resetting obviously and getting ready for this, knowing or anticipating that you were going to have. A crowd here that you knew or you were hoping certainly that, you were going to be able to make preparations for a crowd. Talk a little bit about, how, Gary, you've adjusted and what it's been like to make the plans.
Yeah, our team has been in the weeds since March of last year when we first announced that the 2020 Derby would be pushed back, and so many iterations and so many change plans that led up to that 2020 Derby in September. And, we pivoted quite a few times. I can't tell you how many PowerPoints are stacked up on desks that were, here's the plan. Well, hold on. Here's the plan again. And, we were fortunate to get that Derby in, and it was a great day despite the lack of fans. And, right after that, we immediately started planning for this year. The Derby in our world around here, it comes quick this year. May 1st with an April Oaks Day really sneaks up on you here. It's the same amount of time to the first Saturday in May, but it feels a lot different when it's May 1st versus May 7th. So, we've just been doing the best we can with it. We've worked with local and federal officials and have all the guidelines in place and are just going to enjoy the crowd that's here. And I know that it'll be great to see so many smiling, happy faces here on Oaks and Derby Day again.
And I think the Derby is like an event that a lot of people go to every year. There's a lot of people just love to go to the Derby, and not being able to attend it last year, I just think there's like a buzz in there, a vibe in a sense, like with like having fans back there. I felt it in the mornings, the last couple mornings. It's been crowded out there, people making noise and just happy, it seems. And that was the thing. I mean, that spectatorless event last year just didn't seem like, like the Derby. And so excited to get back to that this year.
I think it'll be a lot like last year's Breeders' Cup. I've had way more horse people coming this year. You're not going to get the out-of-towners and the bucket list folks, that would have had to plan this months and months ago.
Right.
So lots of folks from Lexington, lots of breeders, lots of horse industry folks. And I think that's going to be a real added excitement this year. It's going to be very much a horse racing crowd and true fans of the sport. And that'll be great to see as well.
This morning, it's funny. This morning, the patrons they're free to the admission's free, but the crowd that was on hand, they did something I've never seen. When the horses came out for the Derby Oaks session, The first two were the Cassie trainees, Helium and Soup and Sandwich,
and they cheered them.
And there was like a golf clap. They were like clapping for them, and I we were upstairs.
You're right, though. It was reserved.
It was very strange.
Didn't get spooked or anything.
Gary Young gave us one of these ostrich like, wow, they're clapping for him. It was very funny. It was cute. Gary, talk about the betting menu and some of the decisions that have to be made. And, you know, most notably the one that is the constant source. It's unbelievable for an event that people should just be thrilled about, and eager for, no matter what their betting preference, the carrying on over the denomination for the Superfecta. And now I'll be fair. I am not a super player. So it doesn't, I've never seen such teeth gnashing and hand wringing over something that I just don't get it. It's crazy.
Yeah, I've joked around here a little bit. It's like if you prefer Pepsi or Coke. I mean, at that point in time, I think the Super is a pool that a lot of players are interested in, and it's a preference thing. If you talk to some of the larger players out there, they prefer the Dollar Super. They think that's their opportunity to hit for $100,000 and to have a huge score on Derby Day. Obviously, of course, the lower bankroll folks would say that their preference is 10 cents. It allows them to cover more combinations. I think from my standpoint, it's all about third and fourth for me in the Super. When you go 10 cents, it allows a person to take all in fourth and ultimately could, you know, potentially dilute a payout. At the dollar level, you have to trim your ticket. You have to be a little bit more precise. You have to have a stronger opinion, and you have to be right. And when you are, you're rewarded. When I think back a few years ago, Instilled Regard ran fourth behind Justify in what was a pretty formful top three, and the Super paid almost 20 grand. And that's what the bigger players are looking for and hoping for. And I think it goes back to just a preference thing, and we reverted back to the Dollar Super just to try to, we have the 50 cent pick three, we have the 50 cent trifecta, and we just wanted to kind of keep the Dollar Super there. It'll be interesting in years to come. We've had a few people suggest, well, maybe 50 cents is a better meet in the middle. You know, we're always open, we're always listening, and we're always, you know, working with our team to figure out what makes the most sense.
I don't even know if handle, it's hard to even know what the handle numbers meant last year. But, you know, what has the change, how did it affect last year?
We looked at it pretty closely, did some analysis, obviously with only 15 horses in the Derby.
Yeah, that too. Another tougher.
Between that and the overall handle being down on Derby Day, it was pretty hard to really glean any certain facts out of it, and every year is different. Even just the Derby this year in and of itself feels like a really strong competitive betting race, and I think the pools will show that. I think the Super and the Tri pools, people are going to have to go deep in that third and fourth slot in order to. There's so many of those 12 to 20 to 1 shots that could be right there in the mix. So, you know, it's really tough to make any sort of hard and fact truths out of the data in racing. But I think on this one, we just kind of went with our gut and decided that the Dollar Super might be the best way forward.
Was there any trend from last year in on a wide basis that either surprised or that you took note? Pick fives, we'll go through everything in a minute, but there any aberrations that were that might have portended for, you know, potential?
Yeah, actually the thing that was most exciting last year was we did this the pick six, right? So we do the 20 cent pick six, and because it was a September Derby, our last day happened to be Derby Day, right? So that was the last day of our quote-unquote meet, so we had a mandatory payout of the Derby of the pick six on Derby Day. So there was like $140,000 or something carry over from Friday into Saturday, and the Derby 20 cent pick six did almost $2.4 million. And it had never been more than one or 1.2 or 1.3, even in the years when it was a $2 bet. So that was probably the most interesting kind of betting stat of the weekend. And of course, we went ahead and brought that back this year because it really felt like people latched on to that 20 cent mandatory payout on Derby Day. And so everything that the Superfecta this year being dubbed the Derby City Six, everything that that builds up to throughout the week will be paid out on Derby Day.
And that's the 20-cent variety. So, you know, the case could be made, actually, to people, you know, the Superfecta, the, you know, the 10-cent super players that are disappointed, it might be a chance for you to transition to a bet like that. And then there's the $2. This was an experiment as well, the grade one two-day pick six. And at the time we dissected it after the weekend, but I didn't go back and look at it again. Talk about the $2 two-day pick six.
Yeah, another fun one that we came up with a few years ago in 2019. There's very little opportunities in racing to have six grade one fields to dissect and play, and having the Oaks and the Derby in there obviously add a lot of excitement to a wager like that. But also because of those grade ones, there are some opportunities for singles in some of those races. You know, I think about the Derby City Distaff this year and a horse like Gamine. You know, that's a horse that's going to be able to be singled on a lot of $2 tickets. And I think bettors, you know, there are still some folks out there that appreciate the $2 pick six. So, you know, to your point, our wagering menu is pretty robust. There's plenty pick fives, plenty pick fours, and there's also this opportunity for both a $2 pick six and a 20-cent pick six. So this year that includes two races on Oaks Day, the La Troyenne and the Oaks. And then we have four on Derby Day, the Derby City Distaff, the Churchill Downs, the Old Forester Turf Classic, and of course the Derby. So a couple of fun races in there.
And that was a lot last year. It was 3 of 3. There were three grade ones on Friday, but put together a little pool and with some guys, and we played a ticket, and we were alive going into Saturday. So I just love that. I mean, that was like actually like a little bit of an extra boost. Hey, maybe we can hit this pick three, and it'll be a pick four this year. But I was intrigued by that. I did enjoy playing it last year.
Yeah, we'll take a swing at it and go through the, you know, the basic package. You know, pick fives and pick fours are rife on both days.
Absolutely, yes. I think there are four pick fives on Oaks Day and Derby Day. We start in the first, and then we have one kind of a early middle card, the marathon 13 and 14 races, and then the biggest pick five will of course be the middle pick five that ends on the Derby and has all the stakes, and then we have the pick five that has the last five races in its traditional, you know, last five. Numerous pick fours, numerous pick threes. Of course, we have a few of the special wagers that we love. We have the pick three that encompasses the Oaks, the Turf Classic, and the Derby. I think that one's always kind of overshadowed a little bit. I have a lot of my local bettors enjoy that because that's a great pick three with a 50-cent minimum and allows a person to really spread out if they have an opinion in one of those races. And then we have the Oaks Derby Double, which is always a fun bet.
On that topic, and something that Naira has done, and that I'm surprised that you have not tried this, tying things like the three-year-old exclusive races, the sprints, the two sprints. How about a you know, eight Bells Pat Day Mile Double and an Edgewood early times? Who's sponsoring the Jesus? Who's sponsoring that race anymore?
I have no idea. The American, off the top of my head.
It was the American Derby.
It's the American Turf, yeah.
American Turf. I mean, yeah.
You're absolutely right.
The movement, those two-day bets, people just adore them. And, you know, both, you look at, look at this, these two-day opportunities, an eight Bells Pat Day Mile Double would be fabulous this weekend.
Absolutely, yeah. Certainly things that we can look at and will look at. I think I've had a few conversations with a few folks that maybe there's an opportunity for, you know, a higher minimum double in a situation like that where it's really a special kind of outlier wager. Anything's on the table. The more you do, it gets a little confusing as far as how do you actually play the wager. So it would take a little bit more explanation. But, yeah, I think when you have the type of cards we have on the Friday and Saturday and a Belmont and a Breeders' Cup type weekend, anything like that makes a lot of sense.
And I don't think that a trainer has swept both the Oaks and the Derby. I don't think since Ben Jones.
Ben Jones. Somebody asked me, Ponder and who? Ponder and?
What's that?
Ponder and.
Well, I'm not sure.
I forget the name. I forget the filly.
But anyway, this year you really got a shot at the Cox. I mean, you could go 2x2 with the Cox. You could go with Malathat and Pletcher's Four Horses of the Derby. You really got a shot. Even Asmussen has multiple runners in both races.
Chad Brown. You could have your Chad Brown.
Chad Brown, yeah. So you got a chance this year at trainer, like sweep them both.
I'll give you another one. I'll tell you what. I'm formulating this bet now. It's going to be a 2-day pick four.
Okay.
It's going to be the 2 3-year-old filly races on Friday, the Edgewood and the Eight Bells, with the Pathé Mile and the American.
We'll call it the BIC.
I like it.
The Big Four.
I like the sound of that.
It's got
a nice ring to the Big Four.
Let's do it.
That is adorable. That's a home run.
The Big Four. How do you like that?
We'll do it.
Well, you used to do the Big Pick, right? Was that you that would do the Big Pick? Now it's the last second. By the way, the natives are getting restless.
I'll tell you. I'm turning things around this week.
All right. Let me tell you. We may have to bring Shapiro in from the bullpen. Okay. Fun size Scott. I could say anything because I brought him that shirt from Shapiro.
Right, exactly.
So
I'm
golden
right
now. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
there we go. The Bic Four. This has got a ring. If the races could sponsor it, really, I guess. I mean, as long as I don't have to put up any money.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's your idea, so it's hard for us to come asking for money.
It's the sophomore quad. We'll come up with something clever. You know, we should mention too, aggressive takeout. The takeout's been whittled down on these.
We have, yeah. So pick six, pick five, 15% all across the board. And then, of course, the Derby City Six, formerly the Single Six, just went through a rebrand and a new name. But that effective takeout rate of 23.5% is really, really player friendly, even though it's a jackpot wager.
Right. Ed reminds us of this regularly, and because I assail the jackpot concept, I mean, as usurious. And Ed, you know, is very patient with everybody about it and says it's, you know, this, the way this was created and structured, it's a much fairer and less usurious, or not even usurious, you know, more in line with a standard big multi-race agglomeration.
It is, right. The way we do it ultimately is only 10% each day goes toward the jackpot. So our jackpot does not build or grow nearly as fast as the others. But there is always that opportunity for a scoop. And of course, it is with the 15% takeout, far, far more player friendly than some of the other variations.
Outstanding. And I'll mention, I got Mike Welch is going to jump in here. Was out at, I told everybody about Chestnut Hall. Warriors Club ended up being sent there, and it's his new home. So everybody that was in the Warriors Club, the wonderful concept that you managed and executed, Warriors Club within 20 minutes of everybody just outside of Louisville at Chestnut Hall, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation Sanctuary Farm, which I thought was very cool.
Yeah, that's been a great story, a great way to end that whole story. That thing's been phenomenal, and to your point, all the horse country tours will go through there, and the members will always have a chance to visit him. That's a great ending to that story.
We're going to stay right here. Gary, I appreciate it. Let me know when we can, anything else I need to do for you, and we'll do it. We'll get a pick from you later in the week. James, you and I, give Mike 15-20, and you and I'll make those, come up with a couple of thoughts. What time you got till?
I got to be over there at 10:30.
At 10:30? All right. Well, hang in there. All right. Well, you're all right. Mike Welch going to join us. Yeah, he'll be 15.
Okay.
All right. No, come on. Is that better for you?
It doesn't matter either way.
Come on and do it. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. That was great. Thank you. Gary Palmisano Jr., everybody. And actually, James, you can sit in. Sit here and listen. There you go.
I'll just go listen to your wonderful insights.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, oh, there they are. Mike Welch, everybody, joining us. And thanks to Gary Palmisano. That was fun. And, Mike, I wanted to make sure we didn't get a chance yesterday because Monday flew by, but I wanted to get kind of the wrap-up on the workouts from Friday through yesterday. And, yes, they're perfunctory. They're, you know, basically nobody's being asked to do too much. But there's gallop outs and there's high energy, et cetera. Give us a rundown on the weekend past.
I mean, it might be easy if we just go horse to horse.
That's
if you
fine.
Want to go down the list, you tell me who to talk about, and we'll talk about it.
That's what we'll do. Let's start with, you know what, we'll start with the Coxes because, you know, there's been this dialogue so far, you know, through the weekend and into this week that Mandaloon has been doing better than Essential Quality.
You know, just from not knowing the horses and watching them train and watching their works, yeah, I've been very impressed with Mandaloon. His energy level is high. His gallop outs have been great. He's an imposing horse. He looks terrific anyway. His gallops have been good. So he's obviously giving every indication that he's coming into the race, you know, seemingly ready to run his best. But, you know, again, this is a horse I haven't seen trained before. They tell me that he worked this way going, you know, into the race last time in Louisiana, and they're just scratching their heads over the poor performance. So, in a way, you don't know what you're going to get, but, you know, if you're Brad Cox or if you're a fan of this horse, you got to like what you see from him. As a handicapper, it's hard to figure out what to do with him. I mean, he's doing terrific. You have that bad race, you know, we have this stat now, no horse has won the Kentucky Derby in 10 years that didn't win its last start, and I don't think a horse has won the Kentucky Derby off of that disappointing effort to start before since Thunder Gulch. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he looks like a horse to me surely to use at least in the gimmicks at a decent price. Whether he can win, I'm not so sure, but he's doing well. As for Essential Quality, his works have been good. Look, don't get me wrong. His works are good. The gallop outs, you know, have not been what, you know, you tend to kind of like to see the energy level going out. The workmate has beaten him both times on the gallop out. But again, I haven't seen this horse. It sounds like this just may be him. That's just what he does. And I saw him out in the racetrack this morning. And I thought he looked terrific. He bounced back out of that last work. It's the best I've seen of him galloping in the morning. He looked great. Both of them looked great this morning. Came out at 5:15. So, you know, as a handicapper, you're looking for value, Essential Quality. And now that Mac is jumping in with two to four million on him, you know, you're not going to get more than probably 5-2 or 3-1 in this kind of a 20 horse field. I mean, on paper, he's the best horse. You know, it's just a hard decision to make. Do you toss him and look for value, or do you go with the horse that and your gut is the best horse in the field? That's what makes this race so much fun, you know.
Yeah.
But I certainly have no knocks on his work. I mean, his works to the wire have been really good. Just me, I'd like to see them gallop out a little better than he has been galloping out. But the way he looked today, that kind of makes up for a little of that too. Just the impression he made on me this morning. So that's the way it is with Essential Quality. As a handicapper, I'm not sure what to do with him, to be honest with you. But you know, at a short price, it's easy to decide against in that respect.
Let's talk about the Asmussens. And, of course, Superstock was never going to be asked to do too much in this setting, coming out of the Arkansas Derby victory, you know, and obviously the shortest turnaround of the major preps. We'll talk about King Fury in a minute. But Superstock and then Midnight Bourbon for Asmussen. And Midnight Bourbon has been on sort of that same, you know, positive trajectory and you know, high energy tilt that you really kind of want to see going into this.
Yeah, I really like what I've seen from Midnight Bourbon. Of the two of them, and Superstock has done nothing wrong. He gallops in those draw reins to keep him from doing too much. Obviously wasn't going to do much in his final work. Midnight Bourbon, a bit of a surprise, that final work, because we know what we usually get from Steve.
Mm-hmm.
5 days before the race, they had him go out a full 5/8 into the turn and gallop out 3/4 of a mile, and he did it, you know, not flashy on the watch, but he sure looked good doing it. His work, you know, he's made a really good impression. The question with him is, can he sit, you know, fourth, fifth, and pass horses in here? He doesn't seem to have that ability on his form, but I think he's another of the horses that are going to be a bit of a price, and they are almost must-use in the gimmicks. You know, whether you think they can win or not might be a different story. You might not want to key him on top, but I think he's a horse that's got to be considered, as about five or six others do, that might be prices if you're looking to try to, you know, get a big ticket out of this and maybe beat Essential Quality or use Essential Quality on top and look for some numbers underneath them.
Let's stay with the multi-pronged attacks by several of the trainers here, with so many horsemen having multiple entries in Saturday's race and actually in Friday's too. But rather than Pletcher, we'll save that for next. Let's talk about the two Cassies, because they're very different. Helium coming in, you know, with this, you know, this long run up coming out of the Tampa Bay Derby, and, you know, Danza did it and actually ran well to be, I think, sixth in his try. But it's still a lot to ask. And then there's Soup and Sandwich, who, you know, you certainly familiar with from the Florida Derby. And he's got kind of he's one of those horses, Mike, that isn't necessarily the prettiest mover in the morning.
Yeah, don't watch him in the morning when he's not working. That's for sure. He's probably the least prettiest mover of them all out there. He actually is, to me, has shown a little bit better energy coming out of his last work going in the morning than he had previous to that. I mean, the some of his gallops in the morning, you worried he wasn't going to get around there in time before the water truck came on the track. But he has shown a little bit better energy, which I guess is a good sign. He was a little rank before his work the other day. The one thing that stops me right off the bat with both these horses is the lack of experience, only three races under their belts. That's usually Derby taboo coming in here. It's just the kind of race. It's such a grueling race, a 20-horse field, mile and a quarter. That experience is really worth something. So I'm guessing Soup and Sandwich is going to be part of the early mix. I know a lot of people think Rock Your World could get loose and steal this thing. I don't think Soup and Sandwich is going to let him get away, assuming everybody breaks okay. And, again, we're waiting for the post-position draw, which will – maybe change some strategies depending on who draws where, especially if one of these two horses were to draw down near the inside. So, I'm not using Soup and Sandwich and Helium, but Soup and Sandwich especially can be a major factor in here when you're trying to assess the pace scenario of this race.
Tyler Gaffleone aboard Julian Leparoux on Helium. And I'll tell you, Helium certainly moves sweetly. He's smooth and efficient and...
Yeah, I can't knock Helium, you know, other than the fact that his lack of experience and lack of, you know, the competition he's faced, certainly not anywhere near this quality so far.
Let's talk about the Todd Squad and the two Wood Runners, of course, Dynamic One and Bourbon Nick. Dynamic One has been something of a, you know, a mojo horse here, you know, since arriving. And then, of course, Sainthood out of the Jeff Ruby, and your Florida Derby winner, Known Agenda, you know, the highest profile of the TAP runners.
Yeah, on paper, obviously, Known Agenda is the best one. And, you know, I was hoping to see Known Agenda put in a work like Dynamic One has a couple of times. Dynamic One has certainly trained the best of the four of them. Known Agenda hasn't done anything wrong. Don't get me wrong. And if you look back on his works prior to the Florida Derby, what he's showing us here is pretty much how we work going into the Florida Derby, and that worked out just fine for him. The blinkers obviously have been a major plus. He's looked good in the mornings coming out. He looked good this morning coming out of the work yesterday, too. Todd actually jogging everything the second day out of the works, and Known Agenda, he galloped because the horse is, you know, doing so well. So that's a good sign. He's got a lot going for him on paper. He's got 4 mile and an eighth races. He's got the improving form since the addition of blinkers. He's got Irad Ortiz on him. He looks like he could sit, you know, a trip not too far back and have that late kick as long as he gets a little bit of help up front. So, you know, he certainly isn't the best of the workers that I've seen as far as wowing you in the works, but I think he's got so much else going for him that, to me, he may be the top pick if you're looking to beat Essential Quality. He's the next most logical one, and he hasn't done anything wrong to suggest that you would want to go against him.
Well, and you know, certainly as a horse that isn't necessarily a flashy worker, and who was the last big Pletcher that we went through this with?
Always Dreaming, you're talking?
Always, yes, it was Always Dreaming, right? That was,
well,
that
he was, he worked, I mean, he touted himself in the morning coming into the race. And, you know, Todd made a point to me. We were watching Known Agenda on that March 20th, April 9th work at Palm Beach Down, his first week work back after the Florida Derby. And he went an easy half in 50. He did it with Colonel Liam, which is a pretty heady company, although Colonel Liam is a turf horse, but he works well on dirt. And, you know, Todd just said, that's what you're going to get from him. He doesn't do anything flashy in the morning. He's not going to work 59 when we get to Churchill Downs like Always Dreaming did. This is him, and he was 100% correct. But, you know, there's nothing that I've seen from him that would suggest that he's not going to run another big race, either a race like the Florida Derby or move forward off of it.
Anything for Sainthood and
Sainthood has looked good, and Sainthood held his own with Known Agenda, you know, working in the morning, which is a plus for him. And I thought he's looked good, you know, just on a regular basis. I can't make him in here again. Another horse with only three starts and never having faced the competition that he faces here. Probonic worked with Dynamic One, the first work here in Dynamic One, just crushed him that morning. He came back and was a little bit better the next time. But, you know, my original thought is the Wood was just not a very good race, and you really don't want anything coming out of the Wood. But Dynamic One has, you know, changed my mind a little bit watching him. He's going to be a big price. Again, he's another one of those horses that you may not think could win on paper, but could certainly get a piece of the mix at a pretty good price if he can work out, you know, the right kind of trip. And, you know, of course, that, you can say that about all 20 of them in here. And you can say it about all 20 of them in every Derby we cover.
Now, and, you know, the case of, you know, a nice pace and, you know, having something to close into, and, you know, where he draws. I'll make a prediction now that Sainthood ends up, you know, with Corey Lannery riding. Guaranteed Sainthood draws the one or the two, and
perfect for
and Corey Lannery's going to have the rail the whole way around, and we're going to have some Calvin Burrell 2.0.
I'm guessing, as much as every trainer hates to draw the rail in this race, Todd would probably not mind if Sainthood did and just sit back and try to make one run up the inside and get what he can out of it. He's certainly doing well enough. So, you know, we didn't talk about any of the California horses.
Right, I'm going to put them in a group. I've got them grouped together.
Highly motivated. So,
in fact, before we talk California, because of course some, you know, they've been trickling in. Talk about highly motivated Chad's pair. You know, on the Philly side, and when it comes to search results, we'll do a rundown on the Oaks in a second. But highly motivated.
You know, my original reaction after watching the Bluegrass, like as they came across the wire, Essential Quality and Highly Motivated, is this could be troubling for both of them. This kind of a hard race 4 weeks out. It's the one good thing about the Florida Derby. Well, there's a lot of good things about the Florida Derby, but moving it to 5 weeks out, I thought was a tremendous move. And I think it's great for the horsemen to have that opportunity to have that extra week. I think it's a plus, not a detriment, that extra week. I mean, you know, there was always that theory. Nobody had won the Kentucky Derby off of 5 weeks layoff before Barbaro did. And the reason was nobody ran 5 weeks out. Every prep was 4 weeks out. They moved the Florida Derby 5 weeks out. And I'm sure Brad and Chad would love to have had another week coming off of that race. That being said, you know, it's hard to assess. Every horse is different, and it's hard to assess how that kind of a race affects them individually. Highly Motivated had trained okay. His last work, I thought his last half mile was very strong. I would have liked to have seen him out. He looked good on the gallop out. On the watch, it was just okay. But now that he's come out of the work, I wasn't crazy about him this morning, galloping this morning. So I'm going to keep an eye on him the next couple of days. He certainly wasn't as strong and wasn't as smooth this morning as he had been going into that last work. So something to keep an eye on anyway, I think.
He made, right below us, I was standing with Dave, and he made a noise that, I mean, horses make certain noises.
It was like he coughed a little
almost
bit.
Almost like he coughed.
I heard it too. It's just hard to say what, you know, maybe somebody kicked up a little dust and got in his. I don't want to make any of it
at all. Not at
all. But he did do that. But, you know, his gallop certainly wasn't as impressive this morning as it had been last week. So we'll keep an eye on him tomorrow.
Well, and on that topic, let's shift to the California horses. And my first question is on Hot Rod Charlie. And Gary Young was the first to notice. We were out there kind of watching and he was waiting for Hot Rod Charlie to leave the pony. And this was the second morning here. And did he ever gallop?
No, I don't think so. I think he just stayed with the pony the whole way around. And then, you know, that is a question because, you know, Doug usually gets kind of aggressive with these horses coming in here for the pre-derby, even after they've had all their works out in California. I was kind of expecting to see him gallop today and then, you know, gallop real strong tomorrow. Those 2-minute licks that Doug does, maybe even blow him out a little bit down the lane. I am sure we're not going to see that tomorrow, but I don't know. I agree. It was a little bit surprising and just something that makes you want to keep your eye on him for the next couple of days. And that's why we're here. I mean, the works are over, but there's still plenty to assess. And I think Highly Motivated and Hot Rod Charlie are two horses to keep an eye on tomorrow. Medina Spirit, first day galloping, I thought was really strong yesterday. They kicked back on him a little bit. I think they didn't want him to do too much 2 days in a row like that. I didn't really get to see him this morning, so I can't make a call on what he did this morning. I'm guessing again, though, that they didn't want him to do as much as he did a couple of days ago. Maybe tomorrow he will again. But, you know, the California horses rock your world also. You know, he galloped this morning. I thought his last work that I saw on tape was very, very good. He's a big key to this race. Another one with only 3 starts, but he could be loose on the lead. The scratch of Cato River, obviously a plus for him. It'll be interesting to see what post he draws and, you know, how their hands are, whether their hands are tied with an inside draw or if they can get something outside. He showed he's not a need the lead kind of horse in those first two races, although I guess he didn't get much dirt in his face that time. He certainly didn't get any dirt in his face in the Santa Anita Derby. So I think in a perfect world, John Sadler would prefer to be loose on the lead again in here. Hmm. So he's a horse you have to consider. I think all 3 California horses have to be considered, even though Hot Rod Charlie is coming in off the Louisiana Derby. He looked good in his work the other day, too, but like you said, we're going to have to keep an eye on him after, and he did not gallop today.
A horse that that is certainly a bit of a local story, and there's very frequently in Derby this storyline. O Besos for Greg Foley. I actually had Terry Finley yesterday, and I, you know, they've got a third of him, and we talked about him. But he's the feel good horse, and he's feeling good out there.
Yeah, I mean, his work the other day was 5 furlongs on paper, but it was really a 7 furlong work. I mean, that was not a gallop out; that was a 7 furlong work. They asked him pretty good around the turn and down to the back stretch, and he responded, and he looked good doing it. Watching him in the morning, he's not the smoothest mover in the morning either, I don't think. You certainly have to consider him as one of those horses in that same, you know, price level that could probably get a piece, if everything worked out right for him, trip wise. So, yeah, like you say, he is a feel good horse. He is a horse that, seems to be, you know, coming out of his last race well. So one to keep an eye on. Again, I don't know the horse that well to, assess him, how he goes in the morning and whatever, but the one work I did see was very good.
Let's round out the Derby. Obviously, there's nothing to talk about with Brooklyn Strong until he gets here later today, 12-hour van ride. Actually, he might be
here. He's here.
He got here
earlier.
Okay.
Yeah. I think they all have to be here by 11.
That's right. And then there's some of the Keeneland horses like the King and Hidden Stash, who we have yet to really see in the morning.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of them. We will have reports. I had Mike Vesey over at Keeneland. So in the Clocker
right.
report
Good.
For Saturday, we will have reports on their works. And the one horse you didn't mention, I think, is another in that.
King Fury.
Is King Fury, yeah. Good to be the king, right? It's a tall, tall task. I mean, to come into this race with 1 start at 3, and that was 2 weeks ago. Someone said to me the other day it would be a task that would test even Bob Baffert. But he's looked good. I mean, his work here I thought was excellent. Of all the gallop outs the other day, if you like to see that, I thought was the best of them all. He's made a good appearance in the morning. Seems to be doing well. It's just a lot to ask, but he's a horse that if you say you're throwing him in at 25 to 1, I wouldn't tell you not to, that's for sure. He'd be in that mix for me, too. And tip of the hat to Ken McPeak if he can pull this one off with this kind of a schedule. But can't knock him in the morning. He's certainly looking good to me.
Mike Welch, everybody. Mike, a quick hit on the Oaks. Just some top-of-the-line thoughts, rundown.
It's a terrific race. I mean, it really is. Trying to find my PPs here. I got them. No, they're here. They're here. I'm getting close. It really is a terrific race. It might wind up being a trip race. Malafat is certainly the one to beat, I think. But, you know, she's going to have to work out something and get some help up, a little bit of help up front. She probably won't be too far back. That post 10 draw, probably a good one for her. Put her in a nice stalking position outside. Nobody's worked better than Travel Column. She's another one in the morning. If you watch her gallop, you probably wouldn't want to play her, but she's a different animal when she works and obviously when she runs. She's going to be right up there in the early mix. She does have Ava's Grace to her outside, so hopefully she's not going to get in some kind of a little early duel with her, breaking adjacent to one another. Crazy Beautiful trained terrific going into the Gulfstream Park Oaks in company with Simply Ravishing, who unfortunately has already been retired due to some issue after her last start. But she worked well going into the race, and she's worked as well as or maybe even better coming out. So she's going to have to step forward from a numbers standpoint, and she's going to need even a little more pace help considering her running style. But she's a horse, if you at a little bit of a price, I think you have to consider as good as she's been doing. Clariere, I think you have to consider her a lot. She's looked good out there from what I've seen of her. Millie Foy, whatever chance she had, probably got lost at the post position draw. She worked.
Rosario.
Well, it is Rosario.
Practical joke.
Yeah, she really has to move forward, though, from a numbers standpoint. But I will say she worked well. And the last couple of mornings, she's looked really, really good. She looked really strong out there this morning. It's a good race. I mean, again, it could come down to a rider's race here, too. And how the pace plays out could be really, really important. So I'm not even sure I'm going to pick yet between Malathat, Travel Column, Crazy Beautiful, probably somewhere in there. Ooh. But
no search result?
I'm just going to take a shot to maybe try to beat her in there. Look, she's in the mix, too. The post position drop probably didn't help her, but she's got IRAD. So, you know, nobody's riding better than Joelle than maybe IRAD at the moment. So
that's true. You mentioned Ava's Grace. Diodoro, the most under-the-radar Oaks Derby trainer participant. And we didn't talk about Keep Me In Mind, who has a very nice presence about him.
He certainly worked really well. Surprised me with that
right?
work the other day. And he was full of himself this morning. Uh-huh. They kept him under us. Strong, controlled rain from doing too much. He came out early this morning, too. Ava's Grace is another one of those. You don't want to kind of watch her in the morning when she gallops. She's not the prettiest mover either. But she's certainly going to be a pace factor in here, that's for sure. The only thing that concerns me a little bit is the way they've worked her. These two starts also coming out of the fantasy. They really haven't done much with her. They've given her two pretty much what I consider maintenance works, which is a little surprising. I don't know Diodoro's style, although the fact that he had Keep Me In Mind work a half and 46, it's a big opposite to what he's done with Ava's Grace so far.
Well, and I laughed all last week because they had the Stakes Channel, the TVs on, and so I have seen the Kentucky Jockey Club, as you have, so many times.
I've seen it more than you because I've been here longer
That's true. Watching, you know, Keep Me In Mind on this racetrack, and he's going to be running late himself. I didn't want to have to worry about that horse, and
well,
now he's in.
The Kentucky Jockey Club is in the Kentucky Derby, and that race looked like it completely fell apart.
I agree.
This race, you know, the one thing about the Derby, since they've changed that point system, you don't find these races collapsing like they used to when you'd have those speed horses that got points and qualified because of their two-year-old exploits were in there. We really haven't had a meltdown pace situation
since
in the Derby since Orb, yeah. And it remains to be seen how this is going to play out. Maybe that potential was there until Caddo River came out. And, you know, with Baffert not going in with Concert Tour 2. So it'll be interesting to see if someone could come from back in the pack like that. Sometimes you get these races where you have a lot of speed and everybody takes back, and you get someone loose in the lead, and sometimes you have a race that doesn't look like this speed, and the next thing you know, exactly, there's four of them on the front end. So that's one of the factors that as a handicapper and a fan, you, or a handicapper anyway, you play in the race, you really have no control over. Once those doors open the first quarter mile, you know, it's almost like anything can happen, and the unexpected, and sometimes or often does.
In an hour, we're going to have have them lined up. We'll see if anybody gets their hands forced by the draw.
Very good.
Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch, and the Clocker Report, of course, the weekend Clocker Report.
We'll have Friday and Saturday, and they're going to be, it's going to be Friday and Saturday, full card. We're going to get as much as we can in there, even on the under races for both days. So, and of course, just about everything in the Oaks and the Derby we've seen at least once. So.
We'll get your final thoughts maybe on Thursday.
Okay.
All right, including some picks. DRF Welch, everybody, Mike Welch, with a comprehensive Derby Oaks clocking report. We got about 5 or 6 minutes with James to take a look at today and maybe even ahead to tomorrow. And I haven't looked at scratches yet, James, but I thought this sequence, this pick five sequence, starting with that maiden special mile and a quarter, it was actually a very playable sequence.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, the one thing about this race is that the number three, Happy American, last time out, I thought in the stretch of his last race, he had James Graham had a choice to go inside or outside on that Louisiana Derby undercard, maiden special weight. And when he went inside, he's such a big horse. I thought that hurt him a little bit. It stalled his momentum a little bit. He wound up getting, you know, finding his best stride again late and got beat a half length. He just looks like he's going to be awfully tough in there, but he is a little bit of a one-run closer. The horse that sort of interested me a little bit was Crosscheck. Now, Brendan Walsh has been a little bit cold on number six, but that horse showed good speed last time. Looks like, you know, he's a Nyquist colt with all this pedigree. He's half brother to Avery Island, and his, you know, his dam was a winner, and his second dam I think was a champion in Chile. So it's a pretty good classy pedigree, and I liked it, just the fact he showed improved speed last time in a race that doesn't have very much good speed
in Chile, or the Chile cook-off.
Yeah, in Chile.
In Chile, in the country, okay. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify. I went continuation. I thought at 9-2 made some sense. I went 2-3-10-5. And I will mention that Ghost of the Mambo, the Cassie, certainly bred, if I'm not mistaken, out of a King Mambo mare. Yeah. This has been a turf horse since coming to Cassie. And this is a horse by Ghost Zapper out of King Mambo, the mile and a quarter. It might be short for this horse. So the Ghost of the Mambo with Leperu, do not be surprised if he's running late, as they say.
The next race is a race number six. It's an entry level mile turf allowance for three year old fillies and up. Really a race where I thought that the number six, Prairie Wings, I mean, she's just not catching, I didn't think, the toughest field. Obviously, her last race at Keeneland, I thought, running second that day to Blame Debbie, who, you know, won the Dowager at her next start last fall. If she comes back for Pletcher, you know, Pletcher's so good off the layoff, not 29%, 90-plus days. It's over 30 with turf. That's really his specialty, is bringing back these horses, the turf horses off of a layoff, and having them run well. And I just, it's hard to get past that Prairie Wings in there. Now, I will mention a couple other horses, or at least one other horse real quick. Number 10, Social Dilemma. When I was talking to you earlier, she had just run second to Postnup, who I see, you know, she's won two straight for Sherry Naveau. Postnup has. She's in Friday's Edgewood. I thought that was a really solid turf effort for Social Dilemma. She's listed at 10-1 on the morning line for stall. So I really saw it as a two-horse race between the 6 and the 10.
You know, I've got Prairie Wings in there. People should be very aware that if the 11, the also eligible Bullseye Beauty is in.
Yeah.
Do you have scratches?
Yeah, I got some scratches. The 1 is out in this race, and the 9.
Okay.
And the 13 and 14.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, that I was going to use Take Charge Row, who we've talked about with Brian Lynch.
No, that's the 9. It's a Tarenta. It's the Take
Charge Row. Oh, you're right. You're right. All right. There you go. Mused is out, you're saying, for Keneally. Well, you know, I like the two horse, Brendan Walsh. I thought made tremendous sense in here, and no one seems interested.
Her last was really an improved effort. That now that La Babia did come back and not run well in her next start, so I was a little bit apprehensive about like the quality of that race. But and the other thing with this with Brendan Walsh, I mean, he was 0-for-24 at Keeneland. He ran a race at Indiana Grand, I believe, yesterday, Steve, and it was his first win since March. So he's been a little bit cold of late. Be interested to see if he can get things turned around here at Churchill.
That is interesting. I went 2-5-11-6 and 8. I'm going to have to figure out what to do in the multi race. That's the start of your pick 4. Let's go to the second level allowance. They're going to go 3/4 and Sir Alfred James on the outside and Verb. I thought you might be able to tiptoe through with the 1 and the 9.
Yeah, and there's a scratch in there. Is there a scratch? Oh no, there isn't one. I'm sorry, but the one thing with Verb. Definitely a horse that has just really come on. I thought, he ran a good fourth in this at Tampa, Sam Houston in late January. And I really liked that last race. That was a fast race, I thought. I mean, it was 5.5 furlongs, but his numbers in those last two races really sort of stamp him a little bit the one to beat. My main concern with Verb is that inside draw. I can go back and look at he's broken from post 2 and post 3 in the past and, been off the board in both efforts his last two starts. From inside post. So even when he broke from the rail his last time he ran third, if he gets out, he's going to be tough on the front end. But you're right about Sir Alfred James. He's got 2 wins at Churchill Downs. He really ran a big race, I thought, last year at Kentucky Derby week. Second off the freshening. Should appreciate the cutback. A lot of it in his favor, and I like that outside draw.
Yeah. I've people text me. It's not fair, You're listening. You're somebody that is eligible to text me, and you're interrupting. You're interrupting the race flow. Those of you in Bluebell, the Isaac Murphy, the marathon, and it's great that they do a 1.5 mile race for Isaac Murphy. And boy, Deodoro. Very good in these settings. And here's Lone Rock at 8-5. And I thought was imposing, to say the least. And then a little bit interested in Dak Janiels making the seasonal debut. And Portos, somebody wrote to me. Somebody either wrote me a text or a tweet or an email noting that when was the last time you saw Todd Pletcher spin out of a race this quickly, basically bring a horse back on 2 weeks rest. Very interesting. Portos, the Wertheimer, tap it.
That was really a sharp win for Portos. It was an entry-level allowance. And he did. My one concern with Portos, he ran here last year in May, went off 7-2 that day. He got beat 9.75 lengths in fifth. Sometimes horses just, perhaps he'll show a lot more coming back as a 4-year-old, but that was a little bit of concern. Lone Rock, most imposing single in the sequence. A lot of people have him singled on his tickets. I'd be surprised if he didn't win off those last two efforts, but I will mention number 6, You're to Blame. I thought rallied well last time after just showing very little in his first two races this year for Moquette. At least he's coming in off an encouraging effort. And then number 7, Plus Que Parfait.
His
last time he came up a little short, but I just thought, boy, that was a good race. He had a big shot in mid stretch, I thought, and he ran well here. I thought last summer he ran pretty good over the track. He ran third in a pretty solid allowance race. If he's rounding back into form for Brendan Walsh, he fits at this distance and at this level. He's worth a little bit of a look at 12-1.
I agree, and I ended up going 2-4-7-3 in the Isaac Murphy, and the Nightcap is a very good conditional time stamp claimer for 40, and this is a really better than a 40 claimer. This is a good group, and I sort of surprised myself. I found a horse that I had on first pass, I really hadn't had any interest in, and then when I looked closer this morning, writing it up. Optimistic Valor's last, it fits here really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely that basically broke his maiden at Gulfstream. Optimistic Valor did, and then ran in 20 claimer, ran fifth. I did like that last start, first time out for Glyshaw. To me, in the finale today, number two, Natural Power, definitely was eligible to need his last race. He's the horse to beat. If they do beat this number two, Natural Power, then it gets a little bit really wide open, I thought. I'll mention a couple. Convict Pike ran second in his last two starts here. He's going to be running late. I thought number 11 drawing in from the AE list benefits him big time. I like Maker, second start for Maker. He tends to run them a little over their head the first time out, then bring them back to the second level, and he can be deadly second off the claim. This stage ready fits that profile completely. I'm not counting that last race at Keeneland against him. Wouldn't be surprised to see him run better.
Who's scratched out of the ninth?
The 1A and the 10. And Buggleberry, Bugleberry, and then the 12, 13, 14.
God. Yeesh.
Those are always scratches, too. There could be a couple
late
ones.
We'll see. Did you mention Chantry Flats?
I did not mention Chantry Flats. I did take a look, though. Like I said, you know, that horse, I really thought that was a solid effort two starts back. And then, you know, last time, really just not a real clean trip. I mean, you could make some excuses for that trip he had last time. He is intriguing for sure for Paul McGee.
And there's one other horse that I'm absolutely using has turf form. Jake Radosevich has got Surf and Turf, the 10, with Colby Hernandez. And
I like a horse with improving form like that.
Well, and all you have to do is go back to his turf. This is a turf horse. Mm-hmm. And just because he's a turf horse doesn't mean that he necessarily is going to love the surface at Turfway and with the Tapita. That's not a guarantee. Right. But he's a horse that has got turf races that win this easily.
Yeah, and they're just setups,
and
you know.
10-1.
Yeah, it's setups for getting back on the grass. Definitely, he was claimed three starts back, and coming in on the right way in the right fashion for sure off that runner-up effort.
James, I'll let you go because I know you got to get over across the building, and this was fabulous. We'll if there's anything for Wednesday, Thursday, we'll get it. Yeah, I'll see you every day,
and I'll see you Friday.
You bet, James Scully, everybody. James _ Scully. Casey, let's do this. We're 90 minutes in. Let's take a break. 90 to come, and a lot of it, a good 40 plus of it, is going to be listening in to the draw where James is headed now. And oh my God, it's going to start any minute. Take the break right here. I was going to actually fill the time. I do want to get a few of the results from the weekend that I haven't yet addressed. So as usual, there's just, you know, it's a size 11 and a size 9 shoe. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents...